RandomChatter.com presents
Oliver Queen,
an Arrow podcast.
Now I will fulfill my father's dying wish.
Dedicated to the discussion of the Arrow television series.
Bring down those who are poisoning my city. To do this, I must become someone else. I must become
Green Justice.
Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Green Justice, an Arrow podcast. I'm your host, Jay.
Great Scott, I'm Josh.
No, no, great.
Hello, chum. It's swell to hear from you.
Great Scott is, that's Superman, isn't it?
Well, I've discovered it's actually pretty much any comic book from the 1950s.
Okay. Great, Caesar's Ghost.
That's definitely Superman.
Well, you've discovered a podcast dedicated to the CW television show Arrow, which has discussion and commentary on the various episodes. But right now, we are in hiatus between season one and season two. So why are we having a show, you may ask? Well, this is our summer special, number one. And what we're going to be doing here is kind of going through the history of Green Arrow in comics to give you guys some idea of who Oliver Queen is and what he's been like in the comic books prior to getting his own television show. But first, we've got a little bit of news to cover. There have been a few things going on. I think there's all, it's like, I know Stephen Amell has been kind of goofing around on Twitter. Josh, I see you've posted some things on our Facebook page. Like he did a Vine video mocking the poster for season one of the Green Arrow, of Arrow, I guess.
Yeah, that was pretty funny. He had like had the poster has him holding up an arrow, I think. Is it an arrow or his bow?
It's his arrow, and it's kind of
the
points right in front of his eye.
Yeah, so he was experimenting with other things in front of his face.
I think he had a pencil too. And like a cucumber.
So he's having fun with Vine. Just today he posted one. I guess they're in a pre-production meeting, like a table read or something. And he gave a little hint, said something about a season two spoiler, and it just had Oliver sings a song or something like that, or it's a musical episode or something.
Oh wow! So
he has lots of fun with that,
and he
films himself doing his parkour practice and things like that.
Oh, nice. Well, we have gotten word. Let's see, this article came out back at the end of May, and we got word from Mark Guggenheim that the new episodes they're working on is going to introduce two new major foes for Oliver Queen. And he says, quote, "They'll both be very recognizable names to fans of the Green Arrow comic books. We're really excited about both of them." So, and they also talk about taking it to the next level, how season two is going to be another storyline that it's going to have its ties back to season one, but it will be, you know, level up for Oliver. He's the stakes are now raised, and he's going to, you know, have trained and everything. It's going to, you know, if it's 4 months for us, it's going to be at least 4 months for him in between where we saw him last in Sacrifice in the new episode. So,
yeah, sounds like they're sticking with that real time timeline with the show.
Which is cool. So
I kind of like that. That's interesting. And it what it'll do at the beginning of the season, it'll give you a chance to kind of speculate what has happened in these 3 or 4 months that we haven't seen them, and that kind of gives you that, it keeps that mystery going like we've had with the island and stuff. So I like that too. I always worry about superhero shows and movies feeling like they have to one up what they had before, you know. I mean, with one bad guy in the first movie, and then two, and then three, and then four, you know. I think they're doing it right here, and I think it seems like they're aware of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But I hope they don't. I hope they don't sort of fall into that trap where they feel like
sure.
they just have to keep one-upping themselves.
Well, I'm going to ask you now, and if you can't think of anything, we can come back to it later in the show. But since you've been going through the comic books a bunch over the past month or so, who do you think might be two recognizable villains from Green Arrow's past that might be showing up?
Ooh, that's a good question. Let me ponder on that as we talk about it.
Okay. So let's keep talking, and then
I'm not sure.
As we get to people that are potentially villains, you know, it's it's weird because, you know, Merlin and Count Vertigo are kind of the two main villains that always come to my mind when I think about Green Arrow, because for so long during his run, mostly with the Mike Grell stuff, which we'll talk about, you know, he was kind of in the real world. He was in Seattle. He was just fighting, you know, everyday kind of crime.
Gangs and mobsters and that kind of stuff. So
yeah, he doesn't have the same kind of rogues gallery that the Flash does or Batman does. So you know, those are kind of I'm like, oh, maybe Captain Cold. No, wait a second, that's Batman or that's, you know, the Flash or something like that. So all right,
although,
so
you know, it's not out of the realm of possibility for them to bring in some minor rogues gallery people from other superheroes. I think
sure.
They've done that to a point.
Yeah, Firefly was a Batman villain, I believe, originally.
Right.
Who was in this last season. So anyway, so, you know, Guggenheim and Amell have both been teasing things about the next season. Another one is that they have a new regular character. So if you recall some news from the end of season one that we've covered is that Felicity and the girl that the guy that plays I'm totally blanking on Deathstroke's name. He's going to be Slade. Yeah, Slade Wilson. They're both going to be series regulars along with Roy Harper. So they've been promoted to being, you know, a regular on the show, not just the guest stars. Well, they've got another regular character for season two that they said is named Lisa, and like that doesn't ring any bells for me. I don't know if. But they said she'd be, you know, recognizable. And
sounds like a supervillain to me.
Yeah. Her name's Lisa.
Yeah, I don't. It doesn't ring any bells for me. I don't know.
Yeah,
who that might be.
Yeah, I'm wondering. I don't know. Again, it's like, are we just looking in the Green Arrow pantheon of characters, or do we expand it a little bit because of what we've seen already? So, if you know, doing a search in comic books for Lisa was like turning up, you know, bajillion things. So it's like it's just not even worth trying to dig through it. Maybe by the end of summer I'll have figured something out. But
yeah, they're teasing us, but they're not giving us too much to go on, which is good. They got lots of time to kind of build that up.
Yeah. And then some other really cool news from the beginning of June here is that Steven and his wife Cassandra are expecting a little baby Arrow.
Woo!
Yeah, so he's going to be a dad, and I think he's going to he might name the kid Yao Fei. What do you think of that? Is that a
Yao Fei?
Yeah, Yao Fei Amell.
That kind of flows. See, and my first thought was maybe like Speedy, but
okay.
Yao Fei, I don't know, that it's kind of a unique thing going on, you know. So and celebrities tend to like that. I was going to suggest Joshua J. Amell.
Oh, if that's a boy, that's great. And you know what's great too is that Jay works as a female name too. I know there are people named the females that are named Jay that just have an E on the end of their name, J-A-Y-E. So,
okay, or Joshina. That's always good.
Joshina. That's good. Well, you know, I mean, as a fan of pop culture and stuff like this, you know, I'm sure he's got his own favorite names that he's trying to go, oh, I wonder how I'm going to sneak this by the wife. Because I know you and I have had discussions, you know, about, oh, did you ever want to name your kid, you know, Lando or Luke or, you know, something Star Wars-y. So I wonder what his fan perspective is, and, you know, if he thinks he's got a fight his wife to name the kid something.
That's interesting. We'll have to see. Now I'm really curious what they're going to name it. So we'll kind of see what he's a fan of, maybe.
So it sounds like he should probably be, or his wife should probably be having a baby probably close to the season hiatus here, maybe November, December, something like that, I would think.
That sounds about right, based on when they announced it. So,
yeah.
So we'll look for, you know, at least sometime this fall, a little Deathstroke Amell could be born, and we'll make sure we let you know right here when we find out.
I got to re-up my People subscription. So
Us Magazine.
Yeah. And then there is a new date for the release of season one on Blu-ray. I don't have here what the old date was, but it's now going to be coming out on Tuesday, September 17th on Blu-ray and DVD.
Yeah, that's not too far off. That might just be
within a week off.
Of what it was before. So I have to wait a little bit longer than we did before, but that's okay.
I'm hoping they get it out before the season premieres, because that's my one gripe.
I kind of wish it was further from the season premiere than that, so I could kind of watch through it and catch up on it. But that's okay. That's pretty common for TV series anymore. That's about the right time when they release them. But they did say that there's going to be some pretty cool extras, though.
Those
should be really fun. There's just things. There'll be like deleted scenes and gag reels and stuff like that. But it looks like they're going to be showing some of the choreographed stuff from the fights.
Oh, I've seen some of the behind the scenes things online. Oh my gosh. If they have anything from the season finale, that'll be amazing.
Oh yeah, for sure. Well, there's so many amazing fights just in season one. I would love to see. I love that behind the scenes stuff anyway. So
yeah.
Also they're gonna do some other stuff talking about the character of Green Arrow from the DC universe and tell you a little bit more about it in a documentary. And how they updated it for the series too. So that I'm kind of interested in that too.
Very cool. And if that's not enough, on July 20th during San Diego Comic-Con 2013, there will be an Arrow panel, which is described this way.
yes, in a very comic booky dramatic way here.
Chills turn to thrills in the session with stars Stephen Amell, Katie Cassidy, David Ramsey, Emily Bett Rickards, and Colton Haynes, joining executive producers Greg Berlanti, Mark Guggenheim, and Andrew Kreisberg. Kreisberg.
That covers the whole stretch of the country.
That gamut there, yeah. So I guess this will be their second panel, because they had a brief panel last year as well, with at least Stephen and Katie. So I'm sure it will be packed. Maybe not a Hall H session, which that's their biggest hall, but I'm sure it should be pretty cool. So if you're going to be out at San Diego Comic-Con, do stop by the panel. And if there's anything cool going on, or you want to snap some photos and send them on into us, go ahead and do that. And we'll give you the email address at the end of the show where you can send those to us.
That'd be great. Yeah, I don't know where they'll be holding it either, but I bet they'll have more people than they did last year.
Yep. And you know what? They may end up actually having stuff online, too. I know a lot of people ended up recording panels and just posting them to YouTube. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
It's a great way to get there, yeah. So
wish I got to go out there, but that's not going to happen this time. But
I got to tell you, San Diego, I haven't been for about 20 years now, mostly because I'm not living in California anymore. But it was pretty big when I was going, and it was just a comic con. It wasn't the full media entertainment blitz that it is nowadays. And actually, there's so much less comic book stuff going on there. It's it's overcrowded. There's just so many people and things going on, and a lot of people complain you just can't get to see what you want to see. I mean, there's exclusives you want to get, and there's everybody's always in line for that. It's kind of like going to a super super large Star Wars celebration where you got to pick: am I standing in line to wait for this autograph? Am I standing in line today to get this exclusive, or am I standing in line to get into a panel this afternoon? So you got to make a lot of difficult choices, I think, because there's just so many entertainment options for the show.
Yeah, seems a little crowded for my taste. I usually just enjoy it through other people's eyes on the internet. So
yeah, and then I think you can just pick and choose what you want, because I think you'll get a chance to see that kind of stuff. So end of July, it should be pretty exciting. And July 20th is when the Arrow panel is. But what we've come to discuss on this episode of Green Justice is the Green Arrow comics, and as a comic book fan for a long time, I know he's kind of always been in my wheelhouse as I know who that guy is. And I was trying to think back, like, where would have been the first time I saw him, and I'm thinking it was probably on a Super Friends episode.
Oh yeah,
but it may. it probably was in a Justice League. I know I got a Justice League, one of their team-up issues in like 1977. They would do these annual team-ups with the Justice Society and potentially the Legion of Superheroes. And he was in this one, you know, and he was always a pretty cool guy, you know, with this archer in green with this very dramatic goatee and domino mask and trick arrows and all sorts of stuff like that. But what I didn't find out until many, many years later is that he has been around, you know, almost forever in terms of comic books. He made his appearance in the 1930s in More Fun Comics.
More Fun Comics, yeah.
Which I believe was his first appearance. So,
number 73 of More Fun Comics.
And do you have a year on that one?
That was November of 1941.
Oh, 1941. Okay.
Yeah.
So
beginning of the 40s.
Okay.
Right? Not too much after comics had kind of started, I guess, which was the 30s.
Yeah. So, when you think about it, Superman made his appearance in 1938. Batman made his appearance in 1939. I think Wonder Woman made her appearance in late 41 or 42. He was right up there with with the big guys. And
yeah.
You know, ostensibly he was a knockoff of Batman to start with. So he was created by Mort Weisinger and designed by George Papp for his appearance. And he's always been Oliver Queen, or at least he started out as Oliver Queen. So, you know, he was a billionaire businessman. He owned Queen Industries. He's in Star City. So it's, you know, the same kind of things that we're seeing in the show here, except they changed the name of the location to Starling City, just to make it sound, I guess, a little less hokey, right?
Yeah.
But in those early years, he had what is called his Golden Age outfit, which was, it was still the green outfit, but he had red gloves, let's see, what else?
Red boots.
Did he have red boots too?
Uh-huh. Red gloves and red boots. They matched.
Yeah. And he had the little Robin Hood hat with the feather sticking in it. And, so they, they really accented his thing, but you know, it wasn't as cool a looking costume as he has.
It was actually very, very plain. I mean, even for superhero costumes of the day, there was no.
Well, that's true.
There was no emblem on it. You know, there was no G or anything like that that you'd see later on. It was just a plain. It almost looked like a green T-shirt. It was a short sleeve green shirt with no collar. He had a black belt and then of course the band from his quiver. You know, that mm-hmm. that was on his back. And then green tights.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very Robin Hood looking costume. Now, he didn't have the G on his belt at this time, right?
Not that I saw.
I know he gets
sometimes
that later.
You see different things when they draw close-ups, but
yeah.
But I don't think they didn't do any close-ups back then. That wasn't really the style, but
right.
But I don't think he had any kind of emblem on at all.
Okay, yeah, and you know, and his domino mask looked like it was actually tied on to his head. It wasn't just one of these things that like how does it stay on? But he didn't have eyeballs at the time. Just the same, you know, the same way Batman doesn't have eyeballs when he's wearing the mask. It's just the little white circles for his eyeballs. I think we've talked about this a little bit before, you know, like I said, he was a total Batman knockoff. He had the Arrow car, he had the aeroplane, which this ARROW dash plane, right?
Yeah.
The Arrow cave, he had the Arrow signal. You know, it's just
you know, my favorite thing about his Arrow car was that they never actually got out of the Arrow car. They would always launch themselves from the catapult.
Oh.
They would just drive up real fast to wherever the crime was and then have this catapult on the back of the Arrow car just throw them out of the car. When you're in a hurry.
Well, and the fact that his Arrow car, it looked like an arrow. I mean, it was this long, elongated car with kind of a Arrowhead at the beginning, you know, kind of cut through the air. You know, again, this is 1940s car design style. It was better than anything that was available, you know, on the showroom floor. So,
but again, real typical of superheroes of the day. So just design styles like that.
Right. And he had his sidekick, I think from day one, Speedy.
Yep. And very first issue he was there.
Yep. And so, you know, that again, just like Batman and Robin, you had Green Arrow and Speedy. And that's kind of how it went. Now, when we talk about GA showing up in more fun comics, you would think, okay, well, he does that and then he gets a Green Arrow title. Well, no, he doesn't actually have a Green Arrow title. He actually won't get a Green Arrow title until, get this, 1983. So we'll move up to that, but during the let's see, so the time frame for these stories in the Golden Age lasts through the 40s. So he's got about, you know, 10 years here. He is appearing mostly, it looks like, in adventure more fun comics and adventure comics. And adventure comics, like More Fun Comics, was an anthology series. Adventure Comics main or lead stories were either Batman or Superman, usually Superman. They also had, whenever Green Arrow was appearing, they had Aquaman backups and then also Johnny Quick. And Johnny Quick was... he was a precursor to the Flash. Well, there was the Flash around, I think, at this time. I'm not sure exactly when the Flash came on the scene.
Yeah, it was the
JSA.
Jay Garrick?
Oh, yeah, Garrick. Yeah, Jay Garrick was the Golden Age Flash who was in the Justice Society. And the Justice Society was the Golden Age Justice League version until they, and then they reinvented themselves in the 60s and became the actual Justice League. So, but Johnny Quick, he was another speedster, but he wasn't the Flash. And, you know, he was just some other guy that had speed.
Well, yeah, and he didn't just have speed. He actually had to say a mathematical formula in order
That's right.
Remember that?
Oh, my God. Yeah. And so they'd have this weird little algebraic formula, and whatever it was, he would say it, and then whoosh, he gets the speed from a witchcraft or something.
3x2 9yz4a.
And he's off. So that takes so that's mostly Adventure Comics, and that takes Green Arrow up through the 50s, which takes him into the Silver Age. Was there anything else you wanted to talk about in the Golden Age appearances before we move up?
You know, one thing I was doing a little research on the real old Adventure Comics, you know, from the 40s, just to kind of prepare. And one thing I found out was a little interesting. I thought introducing this character was they didn't start off by, you know, telling where he came from and you know, why he became Green Arrow and where he met Speedy and all that. Mm-hmm. They just the very first episode, they jumped into this, you know, story where he was saving somebody like he'd been around for a long time and Everybody already knew who they were. So he just started right in the middle of his adventures as a superhero. So
I like that.
I do too. I like that. You know, and it gives you a chance to go back and do histories later on and flashbacks and things like mm-hmm. that. But I think it was, you know, and they did it to kind of make it seem like this is already a popular character. You know, you don't have to worry about discovering whether you're going to like it or not. He's been around. You know, you'll like it. Just jump right in. So
yeah.
So anyway, I just thought that was kind of interesting in the history of creating this character.
And I think at this time was also they were introducing a number of his trick arrows. So trick arrows have also always been part of the Green Arrow's arsenal. We've talked about some of them, like the boxing glove arrow, which I think is probably how does he get into his quiver? I mean, it's a giant green boxing glove on the end of his shaft, and he just pulls it out. I don't know. He's only got a dozen arrows in his quiver. So,
and you know, they do those things. So because obviously he's not going to be shooting people with his arrows and killing them.
Right.
So they got to come up with these other things, and he uses them. I mean, I guess they decided, you know, how many different ways can we have this guy, you know, shooting arrows. We got to come up with something different, you know, update this Robin Hood tale. So, so as I was reading through a bunch of the adventure comics, I started making a list of different types of arrows that he had. Would you like to hear some of them?
I would love to hear some of these.
Okay. All right. Now, he had a glowing fire arrow. He had firecracker arrows, cable arrows, balloon arrows, plastic net arrows, a short circuit arrow that was for electrical things, an aqualung arrow. It was just an aqualung on an arrow. That was all it is. You put it over your mouth and there's a big arrow sticking out. He had a two-way radio arrow that he could shoot to people that he needed to talk to through radio. The dry ice arrow, the flare arrow, a two-stage rocket arrow, fan arrows, boxing glove arrows, a drill arrow, a fake uranium arrow. Not sure what that one is for. And, of course, the fountain pen arrow.
Oh, of course. What was that for?
I think, you know, just when he needed to write a check or something.
I was going to say, was there an evil contract that he needed to
defeat?
There
was, I came across an issue where they were underwater. And you'd think, well, how's a, you know, Green Arrow going to fight somebody underwater, right? So, he was trying to come up with a way, to use some arrows. Or no, you know, that wasn't the underwater one. He did have some in that, and he had to use them creatively. But I think he used the fountain pen arrow in, to simulate, a squid's ink.
Oh, okay. That's cool.
and then I think he used it in another issue too, but he was going through his whole quiver of bizarre arrows in one issue, and he's like, none of these are going to do the trick. And then later on, of course, you know, they call back to all those arrows and he uses them all together as something. So,
exactly.
He was very creative in his different types of arrows, and he would, they would show him, you know, in his arrow cave, inventing new arrows and coming up with new. And there was even one where, this may have been later on in Silver Age. I'm not sure. We're getting ready to go into that, but, someone from the future, some aliens or something from the distant future sent him a gift for being such a wonderful hero to everyone. And he sent him a gift of these, futuristic specialized arrows that he could use. So there was an anti-grav arrow and a hypnotic arrow and an invisibility arrow.
Ooh.
And he ends up getting them stolen by some thugs who start using these arrows to rob banks and things like that. So he has to, so he sends them back. He's like, no, we're not ready for these arrows. But
I'm sure they were from from 1999 or something, like in the way off future or something like that.
It might have been something like that.
Yeah.
And of course, everybody was bald and had little antennae on their head too.
Right. So. Of course. You know.
That was in style for a while.
That's what they thought in the 40s, right? So, So then we move into the Silver Age, which is the 1950s through the 70s, and I think you almost through like the mid to late 70s. The time frames for some of these are variable depending on who you talk to. It's not like, oh, look, you know, the year has changed and it's now, you know, at the time, nobody's saying we're in the Silver Age. It's just,
they overlap each other too. And sometimes they base them on, specific standout issues of certain comics that started to change what comics were. So there's really no definite date, but
yeah, I think Flash 123 was one of the ones that ushered in the Silver Age. That was where the new Flash, Barry Allen met Jay Garrick, who was a Golden Age character, which at the time, you know, comics were just, they were like newspapers. They were just kind of disposable things that were put out. I mean, there might have been people collecting them, but it's not like you saw in the late 80s and, you know, on into today where people are seeking out these, you know, issues. They were just, you know, they cost 2 or 3 cents. You read them and you just stuck them in your wall for insulation, like the Action Comics number one that was recently found and sold for, I don't know what it was, $20,000, $100,000. And it was, it was graded at like 1.5 or something like that. It was probably one of the worst copies available, but it was still worth, you know, that amount of money But yeah, it was stuffed in a wall. So there weren't a lot of characters that made the transition from the Golden Age. Superman was one, Batman was one, and Green Arrow was a character that continued. And it was, you know, due to the influence of Mort Weisinger, who kept Green Arrow and Aquaman as these backup features. Mort Weisinger also had invented Aquaman. And they were, you know, headlining with Superboy or Superman in Adventure Comics and More Fun Comics. And they would actually also show up in World's Finest Comics, which was usually a Batman-Superman team-up. But it had comics in those days were, they were still about the same size, about, I think, 36 pages total with ads, and about 21 or 22 pages of story. And then there were anywhere from 3 to 4 stories inside there. So the main story might get the majority of the issue, like 12 pages, and then they'd have a 3 or 4 page backup and another 3 or 4 page backup, etc. So Green Arrow, like I said, would be showing up mostly with Superboy and Aquaman, and again in World's Finest, showing up with Batman. And as he worked up through the 60s, again, you'd think he should have his own book, but he didn't. He was just kind of this backup character that was showing up. He showed up in The Brave and the Bold in the 1960s. And through this entire time, through the 50s and 60s, he was still in his original green outfit with the red gloves. And that's in terms of comic fans talking about the different incarnations of Green Arrow, that is the Golden Age incarnation, when he's wearing the green outfit with the red gloves. When he gets the goatee and gets the kind of new stylized kind of body armor looking outfit, the more superhero looking outfit, that's the that's considered the modern age. Also, to confuse things more, at some point in here, DC Comics decided to start inventing multiple Earths. I don't know how familiar you are with all of the various Earths, Josh, but they decided that Earth 1 was going to be the, when they invented it, it was during, you know, a modern era, during the Silver Era. So they said Earth 1 is, you know, the current Superman, the current Batman, Barry Allen as the Flash, the current Wonder Woman, Oliver Queen, the current incarnation with the goatee and everything like that. And then they invented Earth 2, which is where the JSA lived, and it's basically all the 1940s and 1950s versions of all these people. So there was another version of Superman and another version of Batman and another version of Wonder Woman, and then the Jay Garrick as the Flash and this older version of Oliver Queen and stuff like that. So,
right. So, I mean, it was basically their solution to kind of what DC just recently did with the New 52. Just, you know, they'd been telling the stories for a while, and they were trying to update it a little bit modern, right? Is that kind of...
It was their idea to deal with continuity, too, because when they had, in this Flash issue that I mentioned earlier, where they had Barry Allen meet Jay Garrick, they were like, well, he, you know, how do we have these two characters exist at the same time? Because, obviously, you know, Barry Allen isn't that much older and stuff, so they, oh, well, we'll have him on different Earths. So they crossed the dimensional barrier between Earths, and then it pretty much got out of control from there until 1985, when they had to do Crisis on Infinite Earths, where they basically wiped out all the Earths and just went back to one and kind of merged all the characters' continuities back into each other. And they've kept that and then destroyed it and gone back to multiple Earths and gone back to one Earth and gone back to multiple Earths, and now we're at like 52 Earths or two. I don't know how many Earths are now, but it's crazy. Anyway, so it wasn't until 1969, Brave and the Bold number 85, and remember, Green Arrow has been in the Justice League at this point since the early 60s. I think, let's see, what was that, 1961, 62, I think, when Justice League was invented in Brave and the Bold, and then Justice League of America got their own book in like 62, 63. So Green Lantern was an off-again, on-again member of the JLA, along with, you know, Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, and Martian Manhunter. So in the Brave and the Bold issue from 1969, end of 1969, Green Arrow got his new look. and that's the one that you see today, and probably the modern incarnation. He's got a blonde goatee. He's got tights and a kind of bikini like tunic that comes down like a leotard, and green boots and green gloves with a G on his belt, and the domino mask that you don't know how it's held on. It's just kind of glued around his eyes. There's no thing, no things connecting it around to the back of his head. And he's still got trick arrows, but he's got a, an updated quiver and everything like that. And that's the Green Arrow that I recognize, because that incarnation is the one that I was reading at the time when I was starting to read comics in the late 70s.
Right.
You were introduced more to the kind of the vintage Green Arrow, the Golden Age version.
Yeah. What I grew up with, my very first comics were not published when I was a kid. They were actually my dad's comic collection.
That is so cool.
Yeah, it really was. I mean, they were in pretty good shape. My older brother had them first, and he actually destroyed some of them to a point that they wouldn't be worth anything anymore. But they were still readable, for me, and I really enjoyed sitting down and reading. So my first exposure to comics was comics from the 40s. So I guess it's probably more of the probably more of the 50s than the 40s, because that's my dad was born in the early 40s, so as he got older. So mostly probably the Silver Age stuff. But for Green Arrow and Superboy and things like that, that wasn't too different. So, and then my first modern day comic, I think, was actually a Star Wars comic. So all of my old superhero stuff came from back then, probably until – probably mid-80s is when I started getting modern superhero stuff. So,
Green Arrow continued through the 60s and into the 70s as a supporting character. He was in, like I said, the Justice League, and would show up in their book. He would show up in Brave and the Bold. And then starting in April of 1970, he started teaming up with Green Lantern, and that would run about longer than 2 years. How long did that run? That ran from 1970 through 1979. So
wow.
It was still considered Green Lantern, the comic book itself. If you look inside at the indicia, which is the small little text in the front where they list the name of the magazine itself, it's still titled Green Lantern, but the cover of all of these issues, it's got Hal Jordan, who is the modern version of Green Lantern. There was a Golden Age version of Green Lantern that was an entirely different kind of character, and then they reinvented him in the 60s with this kind of space theme where he's got the ring from the little blue guys, and his ring works on willpower and makes all these weird artifacts and stuff like that. So it's got Green Lantern kind of running out of the middle of the logo, and on one side it says Green Lantern, on the other side it says Green Arrow. So this is pretty much the closest thing to Green Arrow getting his own title. But technically, it's the Green Lantern book. Now, but what's great is that he is as much a character in this book as Green Lantern, because the two of them were kind of traveling around, looking into social ills of the day in the early 70s. Here, it wasn't like it was a backup story like he had been in previously. And I think, didn't he also have some backup stories in The Flash at some point in this era as well?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I seem to recall.
I think he would kind of pop up and stuff like that, but just not very often.
Yeah, it looks like. It looks like it was just like three or four episodes or issues here that he might have been a backup in the Flash story, but the Green Lantern Green Arrow stories were very bold for the day. These were stories done by Denny O'Neil as the writer, and Neil Adams, who is the he is probably the signature look of Batman from the 1970s. If you have grown up in the late 20th century and you see some iconic Batman images you're probably looking at Neil Adams' version of Batman, and it's kind of what the cartoon version of Batman ended up being based on. I mean, it's just really the iconic look with the yellow chest plate and with the black bat inside of it and everything like that. So they had the duo not often in costume. Most of the time, Hal Jordan was just in his day clothes, and Oliver Queen was, you know, just wearing, you know, just a suit or something like that. And they were kind of wandering around. They were looking into problems that were happening on Indian reservations, or the big one that we've talked about is the drug abuse one, because of they find out Speedy is actually a junkie, a heroin junkie.
Yeah, this is the series that he discovers at. It was in issue 85. Is that right? 85?
That sounds about right, yeah. It started with the Green Lantern 76, so that would put it about the right time. And so, you know, they were really dealing with lots of issues. And I think that issue actually didn't get a comic seal of approval. All the comics had to go through a kind of a self-policing group called the Comic Code Authority, and kind of like the movie rating group, the MPAA. Mm-hmm. And they said, no, you've got heroin here. And they're like, well, but we're not showing that heroin's like a good thing. We're showing that this is bad. And it's like, well, I'm sorry, that's against, you know, you can't depict it. And they said, yeah, that's fine. We're going to do the story anyway.
That was very controversial at the time. They said any portrayal of drugs would not be approved.
Right.
And then after that, they changed to, you know, their only negative portrayal of drugs would be allowed in them. So
yeah, the issue got a lot of, you know, positive press and everything like that. I mean, it just attracted a lot of attention. They also, you know, had issues that were dealing with, you know, cults and you know, people with messiah complexes. There were some issues where you know, Green Lantern would fight some of his bad guys, or Green Arrow would fight some of his bad guys. But, you know, they were trying a new approach, and it was, you know, the 70s, and they really were trying to strike out and make their own voice heard. And so these episodes, or these issues, are really sought after. There were a number of there have been a number of reprints for these, reprinted in the early 80s as Green Lantern, Green Arrow. I think they did seven deluxe issues where they kind of put like two issues into a single issue to you know, reprint it for a new audience about a decade later. So, but that, you know, so now we're well into the Silver Age. Green Arrow is showing up in other things like DC Comics Presents, which is a Superman and some other hero team-up issue or team-up series. Marvel had their one called Marvel Team-Up, which had Spider-Man teaming up with, you know, another hero at some point. Black Canary is well entrenched into the Green Arrow mythos, having started with him in the Justice League, showing up in the Green Lantern era, Green Lantern, Green Arrow issues, and then, you know, pretty much anytime Green Arrow shows up, Black Canary is showing up as well. And it wasn't until 1983 that he got his own title, just called Green Arrow, and it was a four-issue miniseries that had him, I think he was losing his fortune at the time. He fought Count Vertigo and then kind of saw that there was some bigger, you know, Count Vertigo was only like a pawn in whatever was going on, so he got involved in a larger thing. But I think at the end he kind of lost his inheritance and or sold off part of his business and kind of decided to give it up and kind of go away from everything. And that was all we had heard about for Green Arrow for a while. And it wasn't until 1987 that Mike Grell came back and relaunched Green Arrow in a mature readers only title. It was what's called a prestige format. So it was, I think it was like a 48 page square-bound book. It was like a mini trade paperback, and it was called The Longbow Hunters. And at the time, what else was going on was Frank Miller had kind of reinvented Batman and come out with The Dark Knight Returns, which was a gritty really modern version, you know, 1980s modern version of Batman. We had had the Crisis on Infinite Earths, which had, you know, killed off a lot of his different superheroes. We'd rebooted Superman. John Byrne had taken Superman and taken him down to his roots and retold the origin and kind of streamlined everything, because the Crisis on Infinite Earths just kind of erased all the timelines so they could kind of start over with all their characters again. And The Watchmen was coming out. The Watchmen was in development at this time at DC. So Mike Grell, who has got a much more, I don't know how to describe his artwork. It's kind of realistic, but he does it like pastels on artboard or something like that, because there's a lot of texture.
It was very I don't want to say artistic, because I mean, I think all comic art is artistic to a point, but you know, just more of that artsy kind of design as opposed to the traditional comic book style.
Yeah, that's true. This was definitely pushing the artwork into more of a higher style, instead of, like you say, a panel to panel. It would be, you know, a full figure on the page with other characters sprinkled around. It was experimental a little bit, and it was using different medium. It wasn't necessarily always pen on paper or pen on whatever kind of artboard they use. There was textures that he used. He would use charcoals. He'd use oils.
Some of the charcoal pictures were, oh, just beautiful. In that.
So probably doing a light pencil, but there's no inking really that takes place. It goes kind of straight to color with charcoal or colored pencil or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and all of those things that you just kind of listed were very definitive events that issued that brought in the modern age of comics. Those maybe out of any of the ages were very it was a big jump for comics into mm-hmm. something that they hadn't really done before. So especially the Dark Knight stuff.
Yeah,
that's really noted as being a big event that put us in the age that I guess that we are now still.
Yeah, it's considered. I mean, that's considered one of the main things that makes the modern era of comics. And again, DC was kind of relaunching all their series, so they kind of came up with this new vision of who Green Arrow is, and this is the version of Green Arrow that it took the 1970s Neil Adams design, who was still wearing the kind of the Robin Hood hat, but you know, had longer blonde hair and the goatee. Well, this takes the character and gives him this hood to help hide his features, and kind of a tunic and a little more realistic looking costume, and not so superhero-y like we saw in the 70s. This is something that, you know, it's kind of a puffy shirt, like, you know, you might see in a Errol Flynn movie, with a green tunic that has a hood and, you know, more workable leather boots and, you know, just better gloves and things like that. And he's using a longbow, which is why it's called the Longbow Hunters. But again, this was a mature series. It dealt with, it introduced us to Shadow. That was one of the mm-hmm. things about it. It also had the kidnapping and attack of Dinah Lance, who is a Black Canary, and she was actually injured severely. She was beaten, and to such a point that she almost died, and she lost her canary cry. I think
it was very graphic. Event of, you know.
I was 17 when this came out, and I remember, you know, I was probably buying stuff that was potentially a little more mature than I was, but, you know, I was keeping up with kind of the moving maturity of comics, which was nice. I didn't feel like I was too young for some of this stuff, but yeah, this was one of those things where, I mean, I remember reading these issues when they came out. They were just, because they were shocking. It was stuff that just I hadn't seen, and it's like, wow, really? You know, I'm just going to go back and read some, you know, kid stuff now, because they were changing the characters.
You know, I think the other thing they were doing is they were bringing aging comic book readers, trying to bring them along up with comics. So mm-hmm. they were giving them something to do as something to have as well, something to read, which I think it's fine. It's interesting to do with a character that's kind of been established as somebody that, that wasn't like that. But
well, and the other thing that I think Mike Grell's a he's a really great artist, and he's also a good writer. It had Arrow moving. I think this takes place in Seattle. I think that's the whole point, is that he moves to Seattle just to kind of get away from Star City and Metropolis and all this kind of stuff, and just kind of, you know, relax a little bit. And of course there's, you know, a gangland war that he kind of gets involved in here with Shadow. She has some unfinished business that she's trying to kill off all these guys. But the place that he lives, they have a flower shop downstairs that's kind of, I guess it's what Dinah does as, you know, to earn money. Or it's a front for them or something like that.
That's what it seems like, yeah. And it seems like she's actually using it as a business, though.
Yeah, I think so. And their house is kind of looks like a medieval castle a little bit. There's like a parapet, turret kind of thing on it. But the name of the flower shop just always stands out to me, which I think is great. Sherwood Florist. Which is a nice nod to, you know, the whole Robin Hood mythos, which is where Green Arrow came from, and, you know, I think was influenced by the Errol Flynn Robin Hood and all that kind of stuff.
Now, quick question about that, about this story, and I kind of, as I read it, I was trying to figure this out, and I never really did determine if this is how it was or not. But do people know his identity? Do they know he's Green Arrow? Do they know Olive Queen is Green Arrow
in this
story?
Yeah, at this point, it seems like that is the case. And if I recall the previous miniseries, the one in 83, which was kind of the last part of it, he was never really careful about his identity in the same way that, you know, Clark Kent and Superman, you know, nobody knows, but people get, like, Luther knows, I'm sure, you know, and Batman and Bruce Wayne and stuff like this. Oliver Queen, you know, it's kind of, I picture him portrayed in the kind of the same way that, Robert Downey Jr. does Iron Man. You know, they're like, what about Iron Man? He's like, yeah, I'm Iron Man. You know, so Ollie does that kind of same thing. At some point, I think we might see this in the show. It's just, it's going to be hard for him to keep this identity for a long time. Again, you've got, you know, a bajillionaire who, you know, is funding this superhero and stuff like this, and something's bound to crop up. But yeah, I believe at this point his, you know, it's not a huge secret that he's Green Arrow, but, you know, I don't know that it's necessarily common knowledge, but I think enough people know that that's what's going on. So this three-issue prestige series came out, did really well. Again, like you said, these kind of aging comic book fans, you know, picked it up and were like, oh, this is a really interesting new way to go. So that launched a new monthly Green Arrow title in their more mature line. DC had a line that was a little more expensive. I think it was like $1.50 for each of the issues at the time. And they had the Question was one of the titles, and the Question's he's a detective guy that has no face. And he would team up with Green Arrow from time to time. So I think there might be Mark Guggenheim's talked about possibly having him on the show at some point. But the Question.
Yeah.
Right.
I like that.
No, I said, ooh.
Oh, I thought you were going for some kind of who's on first joke.
No, that sounds interesting to me to have the Question on there.
Yeah, that'd be cool. Sorry. So Mike Grell continued on with the Green Arrow series, I think for like 80 issues or something like that. And then he did another series in early 1993 called Green Arrow, The Wonder Year, which was, again, kind of following along with other things that were happening in comics. There was a lot of going back and retelling origin stories. So they did Batman Year One, and there was Spider-Man Year One, and Daredevil Year One, and Superman Year One, and all this kind of stuff. So they kind of went back, and this was sort of an origin story that... I don't think the island storyline that we're seeing in the Arrow TV show was part of this at the time. I don't
know.
Yeah, I didn't just reread this, but it was more of, you know, he kind of found a Robin Hood outfit and like picked it up, and because he was going to a party, and then, you know, he had some skills that he had learned from a family friend, turned out to be Merlin, and you know, it went along on those storylines, kind of retelling.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
He fell off the boat and he got to the island, which is like, I think, some similar origins that they had told in the past. But then he was just living on the island, you know, by himself and taught it all on his own. So
yeah, yeah. So then, after about 80 issues, Mike Grell left, and they brought in some other artists and writers, just because he was kind of tired of doing it. And this Green Arrow series went on for about 137 issues here. And at some point, let's see, it was in mid 90s. They brought in another Green Arrow called Connor Hawk. And now at this time, throughout this, Speedy is still around. Sometimes he's Speedy. He'd been with the Teen Titans. He then becomes Red Arrow or Arsenal, depending on the time. As he got older, he kind of changed his name back and forth. And you got to remember, these characters do not age at the same rate as the books are coming out. So, you know, in a year, or, you know, in 10 years of comic books, they may have only aged like a year or two or something like that, just due to the timeline and stuff like this. And then in 1995, they killed off Oliver Queen. He was stuck on a airplane with his hand in a bomb, and Superman was trying to save him, but, you know, Oliver sacrificed himself, told everybody else to get free, and got blown to smithereens. And so then they had this Connor Hawk character who turned out to be Green Arrow's son, and very convoluted storyline for why he is that and everything like that. So he took over and became Green Arrow through the remainder of that series. Green Arrow went away, so that ended in 1998, and then Green Arrow went away for about 3 years, and in the beginning of the 21st century, in 2001, they brought back a third version of the Green Arrow comic book, and to kick this off, they did an eight-issue arc, if I'm not mistaken, written by, or maybe it's 10 or 12, actually, but it was written by Kevin Smith, the director of Clerks and Mallrats and Chasing Amy and Dogma and all that kind of stuff. And I don't know, have you read any of Kevin Smith's either Green Arrow work or any of his other comic book work? Or are you a fan of his stuff?
I haven't, honestly. I have wanted to check it out. Didn't quite get up to that one when I was going through the Green Arrow comics this summer, but I am interested in it. I haven't read any of them though.
Okay, yeah, it's a really interesting. So you should go back and read a couple of the issues where he died, so you can understand what's going on with that. Because I kind of picked this up and I was like, "Ooh, Kevin Smith," and then I was like, "Oh wait, Oliver Queen's dead," because that's kind of how it starts. Kevin Smith is a huge comic book fan, and, you know, talks about it in his movies and has characters talk about it in his movies. So he had, at some point in this era, he also wrote a Daredevil story that did really well, and he'd written several other storylines. But this, he wanted to come back and reboot a Green Arrow comic book and bring Oliver Queen back to life. So they do that, and Connor Hawk's still around, so they bring Oliver Queen back, which made everybody happy because, you know, probably for about 6 or 7 years now, he hadn't been around. So that first storyline is called Quiver, and it is its own trade paperback, so you guys can all go buy that. And they ran Green Arrow Volume 3 for about 75 issues, and I think it ended with Green Arrow proposing to Black Canary. and then they did a wedding special, and that was around 2007. They also released a 6-issue miniseries at that time called Green Arrow Year One, which was a different take. This was the new origin. This is Oliver getting stranded on the island, running into China White, kind of having to train himself in archery and everything like that. So this is getting into the more modern history of Oliver that we're seeing on the show. Now, you had read this storyline, right? The Year One?
Yes. Yes.
What were your thoughts on that?
It was fine. It was kind of just a retelling of the story that they've said before, you know, with some small differences. It was good. So tell me again what year this was.
This is 2000, end of 2007.
2007, right. So, and then I'm now getting caught up on the more modern ones from the last
2 years or whatever, right?
Yeah, even a little more than that. Just because I'd kind of hadn't been buying comics as much in the last 6-7 years, so I'm getting caught up with those too. So
okay, well then, let's see. After Year One, and after they ended the previous series, Volume 3, basically. They then started at the in 2008. They created a new series just called Green Arrow and Black Canary, which was the name of that, and that ran for about 30 some issues. And then they came back and started. Well, they do these crazy things with comics. So they then changed the name of Green Arrow, Black Canary to Green Arrow, which made it Volume 4, except it only ran for 3 issues at the end of, or in the middle of 2010. So then they came back in the end of 2010 as a tie-in to one of their summer events called Brightest Day, which was the follow-up to Blackest Night. Both were storylines about the Green Lantern Corps that Geoff Johns wrote, and the creation of all these different colored lanterns. So there's not just green lanterns anymore. There's blue lanterns and yellow lanterns and indigo lanterns and stuff like that. So they started a fifth series of Green Arrow, which only ran for a year, 13 issues. And it dealt with a forest had popped up in Starling City as the events of Brightest Day, which I'm not even going to get into why there's a forest that came up out of nowhere, but it's a magical forest. And Oliver Queen was kind of the de facto protector of it. You know, it's the woods, and it's his it's under his protection, but it's also in the middle of a city. So they had, you know, storylines to tell. It wasn't like he just went off into the city. So that's just bizarre stuff. And then, let's see, Green Arrow, they then made a sixth series that started up at the end of 2011, and this is what you were saying you were getting caught up with. This is what's considered the new 52. So another in, I guess it was 2011, summer of 2011, they did something called Flashpoint, which again kind of changed the universe. So they rebooted every series, even Superman, even Detective Comics, these action comics, these issues that have been going for 400, 500, 600 issues. They rebooted them all and took everything back to number one. So they, so that's where we are today. There's Green Arrow Volume 6, which is, I think they're up to about they're about 21, 22 issues of that out now, something like that. And it's Oliver Queen still, but he's a younger, fitter looking Oliver Queen, a little more in line with what we might be seeing in Arrow in terms of, I guess, like the physique and the style of the costume and things like that. So, so you're reading this is the series you're reading right now. What are your thoughts on the new 52 version of Green Arrow?
It's a little different. He's younger and not as, he doesn't seem as confident as he always has. He's always been kind of a cocky kind of guy, you know, Oliver Queen. But so far, I like it. So good. I have to give these things a while before they start growing on me when they change the continuity of things. I don't mind when they do stuff like that. But I give it a couple years of somebody, you know, that I have followed, like Flash or Green Arrow or something, and give them a chance to find their groove. I think at first, I wasn't liking it too much, but it's starting to grow on me a little bit. So, and that's same with the art style. I think the art style is starting to grow on me a little bit too.
So, do you know who's doing the art currently?
Oh, let's see. I just looked too.
Is it?
I think Jeff Andrea Lamar? Sorrentino.
Oh, right. Jeff Lemire is doing the writing.
Doing it now.
Yeah.
Yeah. It started off with JT Kroll.
Kroll or Kroll, yeah.
Does that sound right? And yeah. Then Kroll or K-R-U-L. Yeah. And then Ann Nocenti was then. And now it's Jeff Lemire's the writer and Andrea Sorrentino is the artist. So so they've already gone. It doesn't seem like it's been very long. They've already gone through, you know, at least the three artists there. But
that's again, not unheard of.
No, it's not by any means. So yeah. I mean, it's actually probably more common than having an artist stick around for a long time. But
right.
It's again, they've updated it to be more modern, you know, for this decade, for this generation. Which I don't think it's been a secret as we've gone through the other, you know, podcasts that we've talked about Arrow is that I'm not an immediate automatic fan of modern day superhero telling with darker stories. So far this one doesn't seem to be horribly dark or anything. I'm liking it okay, but the one thing that reminds me of the TV show is that they're starting to focus certain stories on him balancing the idea of being a vigilante and, you know, actually breaking the law, being a vigilante and being the good guy, being the hero. So, that I think that's an important theme of modern day storytelling because, sure. Because there's so many dark stories out there and it's not okay to just go out and beat some guy up because you're trying to do good, you know? So,
right.
I think that's kind of important.
But. Well, What's also cool is so Green Arrow appears again in Justice League of America, which is kind of the secondary league. There always are several different leagues at any one time in the comics, and the main league with Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman is just called Justice League now, and he's in Justice League of America. But what I like about kind of this new incarnation, they've really got him as kind of the wise, you know, he's always kind of been a wisecracking. You know, really dry sense of humor, really likes to push people's buttons just to see how far, you know, they'll go. And they've really kind of brought that back here in the newer issues, especially in the Justice League of America issues where they've got him as kind of a secondary addition to the team. So that's pretty cool. What else is out that people may not know about? I think we've talked about it on the show a little bit, and I just want to touch on it, is the Arrow Digital Comic. This has been a weekly series that it's 22 pages, but it's only like half page issues. They look great on your iPad because you turn your iPad sideways and they really fill the screen. They're published digitally, 99 cents a piece. And then I think about 6 or 7 months ago, they started collecting them in print where they would take two or three of the issues or two or three of these digital issues and reprint them in a physical book and just call it Arrow. So it's not Green Arrow. It's just Arrow. And it uses the characterizations and plot lines from the TV show. And this is basically what Oliver's doing in between the episodes or around the episodes, other adventures that he's having that they want to tell, but they, you know, are not putting in a TV show. And what's cool is they've got a variety of different artists they're using, but they brought Mike Grell back and he's been doing some of the issues. They just completed it. I think it was a week or two ago with issue number 36 and, it's after the events of Sacrifice, the season finale. Oliver's thinking back, remembering back to, you know, things that happened to him over the season and the loss of Tommy and everything like that. And he gets a plane ticket and they say, hey, when are you going to be back? This is kind of an open-ended ticket. And he's like, I'll be back later. And that's the end of the issue. And it says, you know, to be continued in season two. So it's really kind of cool because they were taking the character on a hiatus. But, you know, there are issues that fill in the backstory of Diggle, that fill in the backstory of Helena Bertinelli, that fill in other things about Roy Harper. So if people, or if you haven't even checked this out, there's a lot of cool stuff in there that really ties in and is relevant to the TV show. So you can get those physically. They'll probably be reprinting them up until the season two arrives, and then I would think they're probably going to start the digital series again.
Yeah, I like getting the paper copies of them too, just to have them. I like digital comics because you can have so many of them and it doesn't take up as much room. But the paper copies of these Arrow ones are pretty cool. The art's pretty neat too.
Yeah, I'm getting them digitally, so I can't. It's hard for me to justify buying them again in physical form, even though I do have a lot of pretty much everything that I own digitally. I have a physical copy of, but that's only because like most of the stuff is Star Wars, and I'm collecting the physical versions of that. So, but obviously, as people listening to this show now probably realize, there's quite a history with Green Arrow here. I mean, we've got 70 some years of the character now or so. It's pretty impressive.
Wow. Yeah, that is, especially for somebody that's, I would say probably, you know, most people wouldn't consider him a major player in the superhero world, you know, especially in the DC world. He's not the first person you think of when you think of the DC.
I know.
Heroes.
But he's like, so, he's kind of this constant character that's always been there, though.
Yeah, yeah. And for the most part, has had very little change in who he is and and how he catches the bad guys, you know?
So, yeah, I think the biggest change was, the first biggest change was between the Golden Age and the modern version. And then probably the second change was with, you know, Mike Grell making him just a little more gritty. And then the latest change would be the new 52 book, just because they kind of changed his look again.
Yeah.
So
and he's always been I don't know, I've always had kind of a special connection to Green Arrow, and so I've always been a fan, and I will continue to be, because I keep getting these nice new incarnations of him new stories that we can enjoy that I haven't seen before. So he's a fun character to watch. I like it.
And let's hope he just keeps going on and on and on. And I'm enjoying reading the new series, but it's also fun to go back and kind of relive some of the histories of him in like you said, his different incarnations here. So if anyone else is interested out there and finding more about Green Arrow, the Wikipedia page on Green Arrow has a good kind of primer on the different series that have been out, or just listen to the show again, and hopefully we tried to give you some specifics that you can go out and look, and especially with the digital comics that are available now from Comixology and DC Comics and everything like that, you should be able to find these, you know, a lot of these major storylines to be able to read, like Longbow Hunters or Quiver or Year One or something like that.
And if you want to enjoy that old comic book smell, go to one of your local comic book shops, support them, and maybe pick up some of those old Golden Age or Silver Age comics. You know, those are fun to have.
There is a nice collection. Jack Kirby did about 8 or 10 issues with Green Lantern in them in the mid to late 50s, and they have those all collected in one omnibus called the Jack Kirby Green Arrow Collection, I think. And those are really cool.
With a real nice little history of him writing too, that you can read in it. There's a little story of him writing about Green Arrow.
Mm-hmm. And what's cool is that you get a nice taste of the Golden Age Green Arrow, but it's you know, it's self-contained. It's not like the story's really continued on between any issue, right? You just back then they you read an issue and that was it. There was no you didn't have to worry about a part two or anything like that. So,
I think there's one part two in that collection, but for the most part, and that was really rare back then. So.
Yeah, definitely. So. Well, that seems we've done a pretty good job of detailing the comic book history of Green Arrow here. So that's what we've got for this month's issue, this month's episode of Green Justice.
But if you enjoyed this episode, please make sure first go back and check out all our past episodes too, and then make sure you leave us some feedback on iTunes. We'd love to see that. And you can also contact us by email at greenjusticerandomchatter.com or at our Facebook page, facebook.com/greenjusticepodcast. Send us some of those pictures from San Diego Comic-Con or any other things you come across.
And we will be continuing to bring you summer specials throughout the rest of the summer of 2013 here. I think on the next one, we will be focusing a little bit more on the other incarnations of Green Arrow on television and film. And we might just have a special guest to come along with us. So you'll want to tune back in and probably at the end of July, just around the time of San Diego Comic-Con for that. And we'll continue to bring you episodes until we come back weekly when season two premieres. So, of course, if you're enjoying this podcast you just listened to, please be sure to tell your friends about us. And remember, if you don't keep listening, you have failed this city. This podcast is not endorsed by Warner Brothers Television or DC Entertainment. The official website for Arrow can be found at www.cwtv.com. Green Arrow, Arrow, and related elements are copyright DC Entertainment and Warner Brothers Television.